Good afternoon. Today is Thursday, February the 7th, 38th day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon, Humboldt County Sheriff Mike Downey. You didn't have any meetings at the state to go to?
No.
Or any local meetings that were more important than showing up here?
You're important.
So yeah, and you even wore your uni today. What's that about?
Well, I just,
your photo op somewhere?
Yeah, you never know.
this afternoon, we got a bunch of different things to talk about. The fellow missing, the former cop who was missing in the L.A. area. We'll talk a little bit about some of the unique challenges that poses versus just trying to find a regular guy.
Right.
As you're dealing with here locally, transients, Second Amendment challenges, as people are listening to this show and holding one of the two of us accountable for his comments. So we'll talk a bit about that also. And then gathering. You know, we had the gathering yesterday in front of, the day before, in front of the courthouse. Mm-hmm. It's different because it's not an encampment, but how do you manage a large crowd that isn't really inclined to go anywhere? And that might be emotional. So we'll talk a little bit about that also. And you can't throw this one down on Merle's feet.
I won't.
All right.
No.
All right. We'll talk about it from the sheriff's perspective when we come back.
At my bank, I feel at home. I'm Trish Greggie of the Journey's End, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, hometown banking isn't just something they say. It's how they do business. I'm Kevin McClendon of Georgia's Glass, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, we invest in the future of our community every single day. I'm Greg Foster, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
Redwood Capital Bank, our interest is you. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 314. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Mike Downey, but before we do, our quote this afternoon. You ready? Robert Frost?
Okay.
Okay. The brain's a wonderful organ. It starts working the moment you get up in the morning and doesn't stop till you get to the office.
I've had days like that.
Oh, my. So what are you thinking, or what are you hearing? I guess you probably have got a pipeline better than the hourly newscast. About this situation in Los Angeles where this former cop is, I don't know if he's gone renegade on this thing or if something just, you know, a tipping point kind of a thing, but.
Well, you know, I really don't have much inside information. Just what I've heard on the news, but I can give you my opinion. You know, we have a situation where there's probably some, obviously some mental instability. Something's occurred in his life that has spurred him on to do this, but it sounds like he's had time to actually plan this thing out. By the dynamics that I'm hearing about, I just was listening coming in that they found his car up in the San Bernardino National Forest on fire, and they feel they may have him up in the woods. That's not a best case scenario by any means. And we had the incident 2 years ago down in Mendocino County, and that was a 33-day or 36-day standoff there. So you know, that becomes very problematic when you get to a situation like that. So they have to be super vigilant now. And I would think many of the officers down there that are so-called in this manifesto that he's put together are probably concerned. I mean, I would be, you know, that until they get this guy under control as to what he may or may not do. So I would think right now LAPD, LASO, All the law enforcement agencies down there are working pretty hard right now, trying to track this guy down and neutralize the threat that's obviously come about.
So when you have a scenario like that, Mike, where you're trying to chase and it's multi-agency chase, how much resource can you afford to throw at one situation like that and leave other areas more exposed than what they would be otherwise?
Well, it comes down to prioritization. You have to prioritize what's more important. You know, where do we need to focus our efforts right now? And I would say right now, this individual is probably their main focus. This is the person that holds the most threat for the area. It's like a couple of weeks ago, we had three separate incidences going on at the same time over that long weekend. We had to prioritize and put our resources where we felt the biggest threat was. So it's a lot of management and crisis management, so to speak, trying to make sure that you're covering the bases. So it can be tough place to be in.
Does this, the prioritization, does that spur off of some of the tabletop exercises and department head meeting stuff, or do you analyze each one independently, use that as a quick reference, but each one stands on its own?
Right. You know, I think today, you know, versus 30, 40 years ago, we're much more equipped, better equipped to handle situations like this. You use the word tabletop. You know, we run through scenarios and try to figure out how is the best way to respond to something, so that when it does happen, we've already got the book written. We know that we have the playbook. We're ready to jump into action now. But each incident is unique to it on its own. So there can be wrinkles in there that we're not considering that could happen, but they do. So we have to be able to readjust and refocus and make sure that we're going in the right direction.
Do you drill to those? Do you practice to that? Or is it more of a mental exercise, so at least you know what to do, and now you just got to get everybody coordinated?
Well, you know, I think it comes down to individuals also. You know, any law enforcement officer that's a street-level officer that started out on the streets, we do narrative driving all the time. We consider scenarios in our own mind so that we can figure out, not figure out, but so that we're able to respond. I mean, I can remember being a deputy on the street and driving through different neighborhoods and thinking to myself, okay, what if this happened right here, right now? How would I respond? Where would I go? So I think it's individualistic too. The individuals have to be able to respond also. But yeah, we do. We train for things like that. But again, they're unique. Each one's unique. Each one has a different wrinkle to it. It's hard to plan for every single thing. All you can do is in general plan for the worst and be ready for that.
When you said narrative, I thought you were talking about driving around talking to yourself.
Well, you are.
Yeah.
You know, many young officers to learn an area will audibly say, I'm turning onto 4th Street off of such and such. They learn the area. So it's called narrative driving, where they know, yeah, sinks in.
Yeah, yeah. The scenario I've had is try to memorize a poem without saying it out loud.
Yeah.
It's so right. Much more difficult because most of us learn auditorially.
Right.
KINS, News and Information Times, 319. We'll be back with more from Mike Downey.
Now a minute of sunshine for Humboldt. If you have a dog or plan to add one to your family, you'll want to know about the Humboldt Dog Obedience Group, or HumDog for short. HumDog, a nonprofit organization, began in 1978 and is run by 50 volunteers. Its purpose is to teach dogs good citizenship. HumDog conducts classes nearly every Monday evening throughout the year at Redwood Acres. There are puppy training classes, basic training for dogs over 6 months old, and more advanced classes. The modest fees are used to pay the rent and professional trainers. Each session lasts an hour. HumDog also puts on 2 annual events, the Dog Expo in March and the Dog Agility Trial in August. Both draw crowds of dog lovers. For those who apply for funds to spay or neuter their dog, HumDog has a special fund that may be able to help. See their website, www.humdog.org. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic association dedicated to the people and places that make this a good place to live.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 324. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Mike Downey. Mike, the situation in L.A. is one thing. Now, you guys are trying to find somebody locally also. Are there any parallels between trying to find a former cop versus trying to find a member of the community?
Well, you know, I mean, and there you go. There is a parallel, and the parallel is they know their communities. So if someone really doesn't want to be found, if they're really adept at concealing themselves, they can go quite some time before they're found. But normally what happens with these people is that they're, I shouldn't say that they're need-driven or driven by wanting to be in the limelight, but they don't normally go to the ground like that and stay hidden for very long. because there's that need to come to reemerge and to be part of the situation again. It's like with the Newtown shooting and the shooting in Colorado, those types of things. You know, when those incidences happened, everybody knew who the shooter was. Everybody knows the name Adam Lanza. I can't remember the guy's name in Colorado now, but when that happened, everyone knew what his name was. And that's because, you know, I'm not putting blame on news agencies per se, but those names go out there. And so there's that notoriety aspect that goes with it too. So there's a need for some of these people to come out and to be found. But if someone really wants to hide out and they're good at it, you know, they can meld into the population pretty easy, and it's hard to find.
I would think that would be a whole lot easier to do in a metropolitan area than it would be here. I mean, you don't have that many places you can go. Right. You got the woods, you can go and hide in right. if you want. But, you know, how many grocery stores are there?
Right.
Okay. You're probably not going to have too many family members for any period of time who are going to want to be your bag boy running back and forth from the store, getting this right. or getting that. So I think it would be more challenging in a smaller community.
Right. And again, when I said they would go to ground and not come out, that would mean they'd have to leave the area. You know, if someone stays in the area and takes on those characteristics of someone who's trying to hide, there's going to be patterns that are going to develop, and people are going to say, I saw this guy down by the river. I don't know, and I've seen him there two or three times. And, you know, there's going to be clues and tips that come like that that are going to draw our attention to certain areas because this person fits the profile or fits the description or that type of thing. Yeah, so you're right. But in a larger metropolitan area, it would be much more easier for someone to conceal themselves. But if they're going to do it here, they'd have to probably leave the area.
That's what I was saying. I mean, if somebody wanted to hide, why not go to some of the Rocky Mountain states?
Yeah.
There's not a whole lot of people that are there. You come in, you're new. Yeah, okay, you're new. But it's not like, you know, there's off-duty cops vacationing on Highway 80, you know, in the middle right. of nowhere. You know, for somebody to accidentally stumble on to someone, I would think would be pretty rare. Is that normally the case, or are you guys so dialed in with all the technology and stuff that, yeah, wherever somebody goes, they're going to leave a pattern, a footprint, some kind of a recognition that will be picked up?
Well, yeah, I mean, with the technology we have today, much more than, say, 20, 30, 40 years ago, that is much more possible for someone to not be as concealable, so to speak. You know, we've got face recognition that can go out in a matter of seconds. We have fingerprint comparison capabilities we never had before. There's other identifiers that will identify a person, and even just trying to get on any of our mass transit systems. You know, there's so many checks and balances now that it's harder to travel around with anonymity, so to speak.
Well, and cameras all over the place.
And cameras, yeah. I mean, there are cameras. There, you know, we make a lot of cases based upon cameras in some of these convenience stores and that type of thing where someone's caught on video. So yeah, that's a good point. But if someone really truly wants to conceal themselves, they can go to ground and not be seen, but at a cost to them. I mean, no contact with the outside world, and they have to be able to pretty much be self-sufficient.
They'd get boring after a while.
They would get boring after a while. That's why it doesn't happen very often like that.
So this fellow that you guys are trying to chase now, do you think he's still in the neighborhood, or do you think he's taken the sheriff's advice and left the area?
Oh, I think he's probably still in the neighborhood. He'll surface eventually, you know, will be apprehended. I feel pretty confident about that.
More of a waiting game on a lot of this stuff?
It's a waiting game, you know, waiting for them to make a mistake, you know, to not be prepared for the next encounter they might have. You know, the bad thing is you've got people out there that are potentially dangerous, and the longer they're out there, and the longer they elude, you know, law enforcement, the more dangerous it comes for those officers that are dealing with these people.
Because desperation sets in.
Right, desperation sets in. But one thing we have on our side is time. Usually, if a longer period of time goes by, then we somewhat have an idea of who this person may or may not be. So that helps out too. But again, it's a waiting game, and they turn up at the most strangest times sometimes.
KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:30. We'll be back with more from Mike Downey.
This is Fred Van Fleck, Eureka City School Superintendent. Exciting new things are happening in our district next year. Reducing our kinder through third grade class size to 23-1. Eliminating our combination classes in the reopening of Winship Middle School. Remember, we are the largest district on the North Coast, allowing us to have the most diverse course and extracurricular offerings. Enrollment is happening now. Please stop by the district office across from Eureka High School or visit the website at eurekacityschools.org.
Good afternoon, KINS. News and Information Time is 3:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Humboldt County Sheriff Mike Downey. Mike, the other challenge, I guess, that we've had in the news in the last little bit is the guy that had the kid in the box in the hole.
Mm-hmm.
I got to keep things simple, otherwise I get lost.
Yeah.
Did that play out the way that you thought it was, and it was as weird for you as it was for a lot of us?
Well, yeah. I mean, when all that started and it was realized that he was in this bunker with this child, and they were you know, talking to him. I mean, talking is a key. Negotiations, I should say. Negotiations is a key in any situation or hostage situation. But as time goes on, and you're still negotiating, it gets to a point where you realize the negotiations are probably not going the way we'd like them. See, you know, we're not privy to everything that happened there. During the negotiations, some things were probably said, some key things that were said, and some issues had developed that made it pretty clear to the people managing that incident that there was going to have to be a number of backup plans as to how we're going to deal with this issue. I mean, obviously, a situation like that can't go on for a long period of time. But I can guarantee you that from the moment that happened, they were already planning contingency upon contingency to deal with, you know, worst-case scenario and how they were going to attack that worst-case scenario.
My understanding is that there was an awful lot of technology that was employed.
Mm-hmm.
They were able to see, they were able to listen. They had monitoring inside of this bunker.
Right.
In the situations that we would have in our area, are some of those technologies available? Do they get put into play, or do you guys use a bullhorn?
No.
Rather than, yeah, some of
now
the more modern
things. We progress beyond the bullhorn. I mean, we still use it, don't get me wrong, but no, we have a lot of technology similar to what they use there, maybe not as high grade, but the point is we can get that technology when we need it. You know, we have a pipeline through federal means and state means to get resources that we need. If we're going into a long-term situation, then we start calling resources up as quickly as we can, identifying what those resources are. You know, one of the nice things about Humboldt County and something that we've done over the years is that we have tried to stay on the cutting edge of many of the things that are needed for modern law enforcement today. You know, we have one of the only EOD, explosive disposal units in Northern California, ourselves in Shasta County, and I think Santa Rosa, Sonoma County, but they're far and few between. So we have that capability. We have other capability with monitoring equipment and the ability to deploy when we need to deploy those things. We have a SWAT. We have the only SWAT team in the county, which obviously we've integrated Eureka Police Department officers into that SWAT team. So we have a different flavor for our SWAT team than you'll see. It's actually an integrated team, which has worked really well with us. And believe me, when we first started entertaining that, there was some pushback from the deputy sheriffs because they didn't know how that would work, working with police officers.
The unknown.
Yeah, it's worked great. They wouldn't change it for anything.
How would that unit, that relationship, the technology that you have, how would that stack up, let's say, to a Santa Rosa? Is that an equivalent of what they have got?
Oh, no, Santa Rosa would have, a lot of it is resource and finance based. They have the ability to have at hand more resources than we do. Most definitely.
But they need more bodies on the street though too,
right.
Don't they?
Yeah. Yeah. So you're looking at look at population density and their ability to call up resources are closer to the city itself. So they're pretty readily equipped to deal with most everything they're going to deal with.
Is there an MOU or an agreement with Sonoma County, with the city of Santa Rosa, so if there was an issue? Because I would think those have got to be the two largest police law enforcement right. entities until you get down to the, San Francisco.
Well, no, what it comes down to is mutual aid. I mean, mutual aid is pretty well understood throughout California. You have a neighboring law enforcement agency asking for mutual aid, you're going to send it because what's their emergency today, tomorrow could be yours. And so that's kind of the premise we work under, where we will enact that mutual aid when we can and share those resources.
Does that happen often for law enforcement?
Oh, yeah. Well, look at the situation in Mendocino County 2 years ago. There were agencies from Alameda County, Sacramento County, north. We sent our SWAT team down there for a week at one point. So, they called on resources they needed. The state provided resources. The U.S. Marshal's Office was heavily involved in that operation. They provided somewhere in the vicinity of 50 personnel at one point. So, all hands on deck, and people responded and were willing to help.
KINS News and Information Times 342. We'll be back with more from Mike Downey.
Sacred Heart Church invites you to join us every Sunday for our liturgical celebrations. Saturday, 4 p.m. Confessions. 5 p.m. Sunday's Vigil Mass. 7 p.m. Spanish Mass. And on Sundays, 9:30 Morning Mass and 12:30 Spanish Mass. Come and celebrate with us.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 344. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Mike Downey. Mike, we had a couple of other things we wanted to touch on real quick, so we're in the real quick stage of the of the program. Are there new batches? Are there new profiles? Are there new personalities with some of the transient population that's coming into town? Because I'm seeing more new faces again.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was in Fortuna today. They had a leadership conference or training there. I guess they put it on every so often. They had myself and the chief of Fortuna and a high patrol officer there. They talked about the homeless issues in Fortuna. I call them transients. They're transient issues more than homeless issues. But Fortuna, for years, had no problems with transients in town. Well, the last year and a half, they've had enormous problems.
Yeah, the shopping center's got a couple, right. And then out by the river, right?
Right, okay. Right. So what we're seeing most of the time are people passing through. We're seeing the trimmers coming through in the fall, and a lot of them hang on. Used to always be a known thing that right around reggae time, there'd be people show up 2 weeks ahead of time, and sometimes they just wouldn't leave. So, but that's not as prevalent as it used to be. But, most of them are transient. There are those that are veterans that just want to get away from everybody. Those folks have special needs and special issues that need to be dealt with.
If people want to get away from everybody, why here? Why not if you're going to get away, why not go to like Alpine County? You're not going to find anybody in there
Probably because the weather here is more temperate, I guess. Obviously we have a lot of rain, and we can be cold in the wintertime, especially this winter has been cold. But it's more moderate than a lot of the other places in California.
Coastal.
Still coastal. You don't have the extreme heats in the summer, even though you can still get some very warm days. And the winters, are cold and rainy, but they're not snowy and below 20 or 25. So I think that's one of the things.
Hopefully that's not in the forecast for tonight.
No, I hope not.
Yeah. last time you were here, there was you made a couple of comments about the Second Amendment and the gun stuff, and I guess you got a little bit of commentary off of that. Is there anything to clarify on that, or do you feel pretty comfortable with what you had said?
Well, I think what the criticisms I've gotten, which are not that many, you know, if I was to run a percentage, I'd say 75% of them in favor of what I've said, and the others are not. But the negative comments I've seen are comments directed at me because they feel that I'm pro-gun, and that the only thing I'm worried about is that people have ability to have guns, and I'm not interested in curtailing that. And I'll say it again, you know, my main thrust in all this and what I've said consistently is I'm worried about the intrusion into the constitutional issues here. If it's the Second Amendment today, is tomorrow the First Amendment? Or are we going to look at the Fourth Amendment being infringed upon? That's what I'm concerned about. There has to be a due process, a legislative process. We cannot live on executive orders alone, or just not a balanced legitimate public conversation as to how this is supposed to happen. I think that we have protections there. I mean, we're in a community where we have a lot of people that came out of the 60s and 70s and fought against, legitimately against government intrusion. And now some people feel that they're willing to give that away.
Buy into it, yeah.
Yeah, and that's the fear I have. The gun issue is just the catalyst for it.
Yeah, the flavor du jour, so to speak.
Correct.
There's also been a number of reports of people protecting themselves with their handguns with an intruder. Are you surprised at that, or is that something that you've experienced also?
No, I'm not too surprised with that. I think going back to that issue again, and what people have said, and I agree with, is it's almost like we're trying to take legitimate, hardworking, law-abiding people and trying to criminalize them by saying, you know, this gun that you have today is no longer legitimately use, or you have to go through a certain series of gyrations to have a weapon or those types of things. So we're making it harder for the law-abiding citizens to protect themselves. But the criminal element is still there. You know, I heard statistics that there's somewhere in the vicinity of 400 million firearms in the United States. And they say if you take the trend, 10% of those are probably in California. There's a vast number of weapons out there.
Does that have anything to do with the number of lawyers we have in California?
No comment.
Greatest line I've heard in this whole discussion the last couple months or so was blaming a gun for someone's death is the same as blaming the fork for someone being overweight. Yeah, there's still the person that's involved, and I would think that there's would be more onus on supporting current laws that are in place and some paying attention, you know, whether it's through the criminal justice system or the parole system, of the people that are needing to be monitored.
Right.
Because of mental conditions.
Right. No, you're right. You know, let's enforce the laws we already have, and let's legitimately take care of these folks that exhibit those problems.
Thanks for coming by.
You bet. Thank you.
You can keep the gun in the holster.
All right.
We've been Talking Shop this afternoon with Mike Downey. Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. I'm somebody love. See you tomorrow.